At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Go loud.
Yeah. I have a dress that's like long sleeve and long, so it's not like I'm not getting the lads out or anything.
Yeah.
She is an artist with Syrian heritage.
Yeah, I don't know. The word logo sounds a bit African to me.
Like, a load of emodium.
Yeah, your body is like, we are fighting and some medieval battle here. Now isn't the time.
Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops, a weekly comedy news podcast that keeps you informed and tries to keep the sadness away. I am Aoife Murr. I am an author and journalist, and I've kind of got the cold. And the most handsome man outside of Cork is my co-host. It's Colm O'Regan.
Thanks very much. That haircut is working a treat. It's growing into itself now. I always say, can you just take a little bit off? And they say, yeah, I will. And then they take more off and I have less hair to cover. So I'm underperforming hair at the top. But this is a news podcast, not a self-indulgent rant about bald spots.
This week, we have the inauguration of Catherine Connolly, the new president of Ireland. The chair of the BBC has resigned after political pressure from Donald Trump. Zoran Mandami, a 34-year-old hottie, has been elected as the mayor of New York. Internal rows at Fianna Fáil mean their toothless review into Jim Gavin will not include Jim Gavin. And our good news is that we are sort of good at sport again. So we record on a Tuesday, so this story will actually be in the past tense by the time this story comes out. But Tuesday marks the inauguration of the new president of Ireland, Catherine Connolly. Catherine Connolly stayed in Farmley last night. So for those outside of Dublin, Farmley is a big stately home in the Phoenix Park, which I believe used to belong to the Guinness family.
Yeah.
I've been there a few times for different press conferences. We always bring like the German Chancellor there. It makes us look very fancy.
It has an amazing library in it with a kind of a balcony. You can just go and get like 25 volumes of the proceeds of the Royal Chemistry Society, you know, and it's just
stuff the column would be on there.
Yeah.
So Catherine Connolly stayed there last night. Michael D. Higgins left Áras an Uachtaráin. I'm sure everyone has seen the footage of Sabina and Michael D. leaving Phoenix Park with a guard of honour of Bernese mountain dogs.
Yeah.
To say goodbye to Mishnock.
I wonder as they were walking around, did they do that thing like you see in the movies? Did the echoes of previous dinners kind of, you know, because obviously it wouldn't be like little children, their little children running around, but maybe they had, do they have grandchildren?
Yeah, they've got grandchildren.
So they're probably little grandchildren running around. Yeah. The dog who died, maybe images of that dog.
So yeah. A guard of honour was also taken place by the Sanctuary Runners, which Michael D. Higgins is a patron of, which brings asylum seekers and all our Irish people together to go running together. It's a great organization, and it kind of for me was like the perfect encapsulation of everything that Michael D. Higgins has stood for during his time as president.
There was a Cuban general there as well, was there?
Oh, one of the hunger strikers. So Catherine Connolly will be inaugurated on Tuesday. She will be driven with an escort to Dublin Castle, and it begins at around 2 o'clock. Dublin Castle is where all the presidential inaugurations have taken place since 1938. Invited guests from around Ireland will be seated in the hall. The Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, members of the government and opposition, members of the judiciary, and guests representing a cross-section of Irish society. She is escorted into the room. There'll be some prayers and reflections for people of all denominations. And then the inauguration will get underway.
Can I ask, do you know, what's the story with the oath? There was a bit of kerfuffle over Is there an oath you have to swear, a religious oath?
It's a religious oath. You have to swear allegiance under God. It doesn't specify which God. It doesn't say like Fenian God.
All right. the Catholic, more easygoing God.
I don't think Catherine is religious. I think she said that she has her own beliefs, but I don't think she like goes to mass or anything like that. I think she did an interview where she said that. There was some back and forth about whether we should take God out of it. I saw a poll on the journal.ie that most people agreed that we should, but then the journal.ie would have a younger, I'd say, audience anyway. I don't think Catherine has any issue with it. She hasn't said anything.
Lots of other things to, other fish to fry.
So after the speeches and after that she makes her pledge, the declaration is read out by Irish Chief Justice Donal O'Donnell. It is repeated by Catherine Connolly. It's read in Irish. Then she signs the declaration. And she is officially declared President of Ireland. She is given the seal of office, and then a 21-gun salute is fired at Collins Barracks.
Very good.
In Rathmines, for some reason.
Keep an ear out for that.
Yeah. Catherine Connolly and the Taoiseach will both make a speech, and then she gets a guard of honour in the upper courtyard, which most people will recognise from
equality referendums and stuff, is it?
I was going to say the film Michael Collins.
All right, okay. Yeah.
You know that you've had your 800 years, you can wait 8 minutes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And then she goes to the Arras. She has lunch with a load of politicals at the Arras. And then she goes back to Dublin Castle at 6 o'clock to meet me. No, she. But there is a, it's not like the American presidential inauguration where there's this big ball. It's nothing like that. But
is there any, there's no open car parade or anything? Well, not today, being Tuesday.
Anyway, but it is a, like, the invitation I got last night. Well, I just read out my invitation.
Oh, do? Yeah. Why not?
So I was invited, very nicely invited to the, what's the right word? Yeah, it says, the Taoiseach, Mr. Micheál Martin, TD, on behalf of the government.
Oh, he's your buddy now, is he? You spent a whole season of this podcast lambasting him.
Yeah.
And yet, when it comes to
free wine.
His policy on free wine is very sound.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, TD, on behalf of the government, requests the honour of your company, the honour, come no less, Ms. Ephemer, at a reception in order.
Plus one?
No. Yeah, Brian's raging, as is my man. At a reception in honour of the President of Ireland in the State Apartments in Dublin Castle. Now, this is very exciting for me, not just because I worked on Catherine's campaign. So the date that it's held on is the 11th of November, which is also Remembrance Day. This has created a bit of fuss in the North because a lot of, not just unionists, but a lot of politicians in the North will be attending events to do with Remembrance Day. So the Alliance Party leader, Naomi Long, who's also the Justice Minister in the North, said that she could not attend Catherine Connolly's inauguration because she'll be at a remembrance service. However, she is going to be represented by her deputy leader. The issue then comes with the fact that the DUP has said that the Deputy First Minister, Emma Little Pengley, will not be in attendance because she has a remembrance service, but they have also refuse to send anyone else. This has created a lot of friction in the North because it is seen as part of a long pattern of the DUP refusing to hold out the hand to Catholic and nationalist communities in the North in which Catherine Connolly is considered their president.
And just for anyone wondering, the 11th of November is the inauguration day, not because, just for the crack, it's, first of all, it's the day after the last day, which is Michael D's last day. And the pattern of the 11th and 10th started because Mary Robinson resigned her presidency slightly early in 1997. So normally, I think the inauguration would have been in early December, which would have been clashing with the toy show. So, you know.
So the DUP has come under lots of criticism. I was on BBC Radio yesterday with actually one, a former DUP advisor who also said it was a bad idea. The feeling is very much, just from my quick analysis, the DUP are losing votes on the left and the right. They're hemorrhaging votes at this stage.
How many votes do they have on the left?
No, I mean that people are moving towards the centre, so they'll be voting people who traditionally would have been young Protestant people who traditionally would have been DUP voters are now voting for like Alliance.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So that's why Alliance has really increased in popularity, is because more younger people who are not as, you know, didn't grow up through the Troubles and don't have the same belief system as their parents, they are now voting for more centrist parties, and that's why Alliance has recently become a bit more popular. They believe they're in election mode now. And what the DUP former advisor Tim Cairn said to me on the radio yesterday was he believes that their plan is what we have, we hold. They are not in a position of growth. So they don't want to be seen to give an inch. Okay. They want to shore up that right wing vote that they are losing to the traditional unionist voice. And that is why they've decided not to go. It's a bad PR move because there is actually precedence for this. Former DUP First Minister Peter Robinson did attend the inauguration of Michael D. Higgins in the first term. So it does, it's not to say the DUP never go. It seems to be the DUP are losing votes, they're paranoid, and they can't be given an inch to them nationalists, yeah. So they are not going to be attending. Michelle O'Neill said it's very disappointing. A lot of actually Alliance and different unionists or centrists have said in the North that they find it very disappointing. Stormont is very hostile towards each other at the minute, and I actually do feel like we're going backwards. I feel like the days of Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill hugging each other at Martin McGuinness's funeral are very much gone. And
that does seem a long time ago.
So as of Wednesday morning, when this podcast is released, you will all be waking up today with this podcast, and Catherine Connolly will be the President of Ireland and the third female president. Mm. Second in a row, Galway president. We need to talk about the corruption of Galway people.
Well, and also we need to tell what large landowners need to do, because to read the foreign press, she's obviously going to collectivise land and seize the means of production.
Yeah, she's got a lot of power, apparently, according to the people who don't know anything about Irish politics.
And you're going to the Do?
I'm going to the Do. I'm not going to the inauguration.
Is it a sit-down or will it be canapés?
It says light refreshments on the... So you got an extra sneaky bit of paper with the fancy invite that tells you all your stuff, like what door do you want and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's just an A4 sheet. That's not fancy.
The dress code for the inauguration has been...
business attire.
Business attire. So the inauguration was downgraded, in my view, from top coat and full-on frocks. I think from Mary McAleese's election or inauguration. So for your business attire, so...
I'm wearing a dress. Yeah. I have a dress that's like long sleeve and long, so it's not like I'm not getting the lads out or anything.
The girls, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to get Mary-Kate and Ashley out in front of the Taoiseach.
Who's left or who's right?
One's bigger than the other, so.
And will it be rowdy? Does something like that get rowdy? Are there too many media around?
I think the general median age will be a good bit older. I mean, I'm 34 and I think I'll be one of the younger people there, other than obviously the president's sons who are younger than me.
It's the only election that I'm comforted by that you have to be over a certain age. I'm unlikely to see a president younger than me in my lifetime.
Speaking of, we move to our next story. A 34-year-old democratic socialist Muslim originally from Uganda has been elected mayor of New York.
He ticks all the boxes.
All the boxes. Any fear-mongering bigot.
Yeah.
It's like bingo. So Zoran Mandami won the battle to become the next mayor of New York with a huge, he won by over 50% of the vote. Now I would say the Democrats always tend to win the New York City election. I've actually read some very funny thing pieces about how like the Republican Party actually don't even have like an infrastructure in New York because they never think they're going to win. He beat disgraced former governor Andrew Cuomo, who was credibly accused of sexual harassment and abuse by 13 different women, and also was seen to have completely failed in the COVID era of his governorship. Zoran Mandami went from 1% in the polls to over 50% with what he won. He was not backed by his own party. He was not backed by big surrogates like President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. And I actually listened to a podcast this morning that said the only thing equal to the right-wing panic that America saw about Zoran Mandami was equal to the panic of the actual Democratic establishment.
Mm.
They are terrified of Zoran Mandami, who does not take any big donations. It was like Catherine Connolly's campaign in that it was completely community grassroots donations. He has never taken any money from any Israeli-backed groups. He has spoken out about his support of the people of Gaza and an end to the genocide. He believes in decriminalizing sex work. He believes in decriminalizing drugs and promoting rehabilitation techniques. He has a huge critic of capitalism. And most of his campaign, when you watched it, was he was talking about bread and butter issues. So like a big thing is like he wants to make all buses in New York free.
Just like the Lewises in Dublin. Mm. Yeah.
He wants to make all buses in New York free. He also wants to start 5 city subsidized grocery stores in poor areas. These are not huge things. These are things that have been done before. And he wants to bring them back for the poorest New Yorkers. He's talked a lot about fighting against anti-Semitism, which is an issue in New York.
He also, it's an cleverly, like it's 3 or 4 policies that you can remember. Yeah. I mean, you know, he didn't promise all things to everybody. No. They're very tangible. Yeah. And
there are also things that have been done before. So yeah. New York made buses free during COVID. They already have done subsidized supermarkets in poor areas before. So you couldn't even say, oh, this is all radical ideas because they have done this before. He won. Oh, he also, which I love about him, he met his wife on Hinge.
All right.
Which I think is like the most millennial coded thing. I met my boyfriend on Bumble.
Is it even too young to be millennial? What's the age of millennials?
So he's millennial. Yeah. He is a very, very young millennial and his wife is Gen Z. She's only 29, I think. Yeah. And he's 34.
There was some New York, I think it was the New York Post. They couldn't find anything about her. Like, but they said she's, in inverted commas, very involved in her husband's campaign.
They said his artistic, aloof wife.
Aloof, yeah. And she designed his logo.
Logo. She's an artist. Yeah. She is an artist with Syrian heritage.
Yeah. I don't know. The word logo sounds a bit African to me.
So... a little bit of background about Zoran, other than his wife, who, to be fair, she's so beautiful but and very talented. Zoran Mandami was born in 1991, and he, before this, served as a member of the New York State Assembly representing the Queens neighborhood of Astoria. So that's a really melting pot kind of area. He was born in Kampala in Uganda to an academic of colonialism. Mahmoud Mamdani, and his mother is a filmmaker. She's a director called Meera Nair. They are both of Indian descent, but then eventually moved to Uganda.
But they weren't part of the Idi Amin moving of Asian people.
They seem to be very, obviously, arty-farty type. His mum directed that film from the 2000s called Mississippi Masala. Do you remember this?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so that's like her big... anyway, but her big career thing.
Although, if I'm in the New York Post now, I'm saying his mother directed the failed 2000 because I haven't heard of it. So obviously, it's
so a lot of his platform included free city buses, universal public childcare, city-owned grocery stores, a rent freeze on rent-stabilized units, affordable housing, a $30 minimum wage by 2030. He's also supported trans rights, comprehensive public safety reform, tax increases on corporations. And those earning above $1 million annually. So you can see why the Democratic and Republican establishment would be quite nervous about someone like Indian Ugandan Zoran Mandami becoming elected. So one of the main critics of Zoran Mandami has been American President Donald Trump. Donald Trump said that he would take on Zoran Mandami and he would cut federal funding to New York City. Also worth pointing out, Donald Trump himself is a native New Yorker. He does not like Zoran Mandami. He says that he's a communist and a socialist. Just for a point, you can't be both. You're either a socialist or a communist. And Americans have absolutely no idea what socialism is. Do you know, Americans have done to the word socialism what they've done to the word literally. They do not know what that word means anymore. It has become so bastardized that they don't even know what it means and it doesn't mean what they think it means.
The battle on literally has been lost a long time ago. So.
They've literally lost the word battle on socialism. So Donald Trump has already done this. He has wielded the federal power and bully pulpit that he has against several Democratic-run cities. He sent a National Guard to places like California and he's cracking down on immigration. He has cut billions of funding to cities since the government shutdown on the 1st of October, including New York, where he froze $18 billion in federal money for major infrastructure projects. There is now a fear that he will do more towards New York because Mandami has won. and so he does not like him.
It would be similar to any sanctions or a blockade of, say, somewhere like Cuba, say, 40, 50 years ago.
It would be like Micheál Martin saying he's not going to build anything in Donegal. Oh, already did that. No, yeah. It would be like Micheál Martin saying, well, Donegal and Louth keep voting for Sinn Féin, so I'm not giving you any money for roads.
But the Democrats, so Democrats are kind of at a crossroads anyway, because they're looking at how do we come back. And there's two ways of doing it. One is to be centrist, to try and capture the...
which famously is not working for them, because they've tried that for the last 100 years.
So that would be the Kamala approach. Mm-hmm. Tough on crime, or we're friends of business, all that kind of thing. And they end up losing anyway.
Mm.
Or they go...
It's like the
hard
thing of, like, why would you vote for diet Tories when you can just vote for Tories? Why would people vote for diet Republicans if you could just vote for Republicans? The only thing that Democrats have never actually tried is being centre-left. And they, in the history of America, have not been either popular or successful. The days of Bill Clinton, those days are gone. The future of the most popular Democratic politicians are people like AOC, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Zora Mandami. The other thing worth pointing out is the Democrats had a very good night the night that they elected Zora Mandami. A left-wing Democratic Socialist is not going to work in every place. No one is saying that they have to do that, but they need to accept it for more liberal places like New York. So, for instance, the woman who won in New Jersey was literally a member of the CIA.
Yeah.
So, like, that person isn't going to get elected in hipster New York, but she did get elected in New Jersey. And maybe the point of the Democrats is, let the cities decide who they want to elect, and like, and who, because of course a Muslim immigrant would work in New York, because a lot of New York is immigrant people who do not consider themselves Democrats or white or whatever it is. And this notion that, like, they would rather have someone who was credibly accused of sexual harassment by 13 women, because that's what they know. Vile.
So in order to do the big thing, so he wants to pay for the free buses and other infrastructure things. He wants to tax people over a million. But in order to do that, he needs the say-so of the governor of New York, who is
a Democrat,
Kathy Hochul. But she's nervous of...
She never backed him either.
Yeah, she never backed him. Nervous of re-election. And she has to be elected by people, not just in New York, but in upstate New York, who would not necessarily
not just
be...
New York City.
Yeah, Mamdani's people. So there's a chance that he may not get to do what he wants to do, but...
It'll be like everything else, you know, like even with Barack Obama, he'll be so hamstrung by right-wing people, both inside and outside of his own party,
that he'll end up launching drone strikes in Syria.
That he won't be able to get much done, I fear.
Also, though, it's a little insight into having a mayor that can do stuff.
Yes, directly elected mayor as well, which we now have in Limerick.
Limerick. He's the fellow who banned Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, he said the existing proposals for Christmas market are not up to scratch, so let's have none. Mm. I kind of admire it. I mean, if there's money going to be wasted on shite...
I was going to say, like, if you're not going to do it right, don't do it.
Yeah. Now, we don't know that they're not going to do it right. We haven't heard the other side, blah, blah, blah. But don't want to go against the mayor. He's the most powerful Limerick person in the country.
Anyway, it is a chink of light into what is a very grim time in politics. I am not saying that you need to support Zora Mandami or even agree with this politics, but I think having someone who can get elected in somewhere like America, not taking huge amounts of money from large donors, is something that we should all be very excited about. I think large donors, and we don't have the same issue here in Ireland, thank God. But I think the more community gets involved in politics, the better politics will be, no matter who you support.
Because there's more, he literally has to listen to more people. So whatever views he comes up with has to be an amalgam of more people's opinions, which generally is a better thing than, you know, three billionaires telling you, I know it'll be great for everyone.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
There has been shockwaves sent through Britain and my former employer, the BBC, when Tim Davey announced his resignation as Director General, along with Deborah Turnus, the head of BBC News. This has been sparked by days of political pressure involving American president and world's biggest bully, Donald Trump. It was a pretty trivial thing as a journalist, I could say. So there was a Panorama documentary that focused on Donald Trump's second chance at president, spliced together two parts of one speech. So one line he said, and then 50 minutes later in the same speech, he did splice that in as if it kind of looked like it was two following sentences. Journalists and broadcasters do this all the time. It's pretty normal.
Sneaky enough, but
the words were said. They were not taken. Yeah. Now, Trump will argue that they were taken out of context. So the issue was, it was January 6th, and it was about Donald Trump saying, all my followers should come with me down to the Capitol. And then 50 minutes later said, we're going to fight, fight, fight.
Yeah.
Supporters of Donald Trump say that the BBC made out that Donald Trump encouraged the insurrection. Most people in America think Donald Trump encouraged the insurrection. However, it was clunkily done and the BBC should know better. Tim Davies and Deborah Turnus did not do this. This was probably a very low-level editor who spliced this together.
The analogy I would use is they had an open goal. And instead of kicking the ball into the open goal, they kicked the ball into the open goal, but also elbowed the goalkeeper in the face on the way. Like they could have made the point without this.
Without this. Yeah. This is a journalistic mistake, right? The BBC should know better. You'd expect it from maybe like Fox News, but not the BBC. However, if this was a genuine concern, this might... The resignation of these two people is so out of proportion. So I want to explain how this happened. The reason this all came out was there was once upon a time, there was a journalist called Michael Prescott who was working as an independent external advisor to the BBC's Editorial Standards Committee. So, as someone who worked in the BBC, editorial standards is a huge thing in the BBC, this impartiality at all times, everything. If you're not sure, you have to flag it up the chain. And if they're not sure, you flag it up the chain. And it's all very bureaucratic.
And ironically, people are often furious with the BBC, say, in recent Israel-Gaza coverage, because it's seen as being so limp.
Yes, very limp.
That it basically will, unless the genocide's right over there in the next room.
Even then.
Yeah.
So,
they won't say it.
According to The Guardian, Michael Prescott's appointment to this job was pushed by BBC board member Robbie Gibb.
Who?
Robbie Gibb. Where have I heard that name before?
He's not one of the Bee Gees.
Robbie Gibb was communications chief for former Conservative Prime Minister Theresa May and helped set up the broadcaster GB News. Prescott left the BBC in June 2025, and during this time he wrote a letter to the BBC board drawing attention to what he saw as problems of serious and systemic editorial bias within the broadcaster. He used the Trump case study to give support to this case. So, he said that he brought this to the attention of the board members and they refused to accept that there had been a breach of standards. Now, can you imagine? The letter that Mr. Gibb wrote somehow got into the hands of a journalist at the Daily Telegraph.
Your mind has been poisoned, Aoife. You just see conspiracies where there is none.
So it is not known how the letter managed to get into the Daily Telegraph. This intrepid journalist, the Daily Telegraph, must have found it on the tube. So anyway.
Maybe it's one of those things where the email, it begins with the same letter and you accidentally send it to the wrong person.
Maybe. Yeah. So the Daily Telegraph did write this story. They said, exclusive BBC Dr. Trump speech internal report reveals. The Trump White House, obviously, immediately jumped on this. Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary, said the BBC was 100% fake news and a propaganda machine. Trump said they were very dishonest people trying to step on the scales of a presidential election. So this now has been weeks and weeks and weeks, days and days and days of political pressure on the BBC. The BBC is already under huge amounts of political pressure and has to go now very shortly, cap in hand, to the British government and ask for more funding to keep the BBC alive. And there is a feeling that with all this going on, if those two people were no longer at the top of the BBC, it would make it much easier to go under the British government and say, I'm the new Director General, and I'm going to shake this place up and we're never going to see this again. What happened was a breach of standards of the BBC's own standards, right? No one is suggesting it's not. However, there have been lots of breaches of standards. Human error, people's own individual bias. That's absolutely a thing that happens in journalism. These two people caving in to this political pressure is such a bad sign for journalism. I worked in the BBC. I've also worked for RTE. I really believe in public sector broadcasting. I don't think journalism can be completely unbiased. I think every human being who does a job brings their own bias. I do believe that political correspondents and journalists can go in and treat everyone the same. I know when I used to be in Leinster House, I don't trust any of them. So it makes it a lot easier to do a story about Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, Social Democrats, because I don't trust them. They're all the same to me, although I would agree with some of their beliefs more than others. But this is the same as MSNBC caving in to Donald Trump. It's the same as Paramount paying him $12 million to make a case go away, a case that they would have won. Donald Trump and the American fascist government is bullying journalism, journalists and big broadcasters into bending the knee to him. And those who bend it first, bend the farthest. The BBC, make no mistake about it, and the BBC has massive amount of issues. I think their Gaza coverage has been appalling. The notion that they're unbiased is laughable anyway. Whatever you think of the BBC, the Director General and the Head of News leaving the BBC because Trump doesn't like them is such a bad sign. And we should all be very worried about it, no matter what you think of the BBC. There's this notion of like impartiality, right? So this person thinks this and this person thinks that, and we have to give both of them equal time. No, you don't. If one of their opinions is factually incorrect, you don't. This is why climate change is being so poorly reported, because people now impartiality in places like the BBC is he says the sky is blue and she says it's green and I have to give both these people equal weight. No, you don't. That's not what journalism is. And you see it all the time. RTE, again, their Gaza coverage has been appalling. And it's because they are worried about, they're worried about all the wrong things, I personally think. I think the point is, and we've seen this actually with Catherine Conley and Zoran Mandami, if you're going to have a belief and a principle, you then have to stick to it. And the folding, once you fold once, you will keep folding. We have seen it so much with the BBC. And it is very funny to me that they are willing to sack someone like Gary Lineker and the huge outrage that that caused. But the head of news could withstand that, or the director general could withstand that, but they can't withstand Donald Trump.
It sounds like they need a reset.
It's incredibly worrying, and I know people are very happy to give off about the BBC and RT, whatever, but you will miss them when you are gone and we could end up like America. And that's definitely not what you want. We are back in Ireland for this story where the long road of what went wrong in Fianna Fáil during the presidential election continues.
The butterfly wing of the Irish presidential election campaign that's consuming all around it.
For context, Jim Gavin, the former Dublin GAA manager, was chosen, despite not being a member of Fianna Fáil and not a political person before this, was chosen to run for Fianna Fáil as President of Ireland before he dropped out because he owed a previous tenant over €3,000 and hadn't paid him back. There is going to be an internal review within Fianna Fáil about how Jim Gavin became the candidate, why other voices who wanted other people to be the candidates were not listening, and how the mess of vetting Jim Gavin and what happened came about. It has come out this week that Jim Gavin has refused to be involved in the internal review as he is not an elected official.
I don't blame him. I would just be in Aruba now.
Yeah.
Like he's in Carlo. Is it last week or this week? Doing some leadership conference.
The corporate. Neck.
Well, I don't know. I think this can be about resilience now and coming back
leadership
from adversity.
Leadership from a man who should have been in the small claims court.
It's life experience. It's, you know, if you live in a bubble and you don't do stuff like forget to pay a tenant back their €3,500, and how can you tell other people about that lived experience?
I'll never be in a position where I have a tenant, to put it that way. But Jim Gavin is not a political representative or elected representative. He cannot be forced to take part in the internal Fianna Fáil review. And if you can believe it, it appears that this internal Fianna Fáil review into where it all went wrong and how Micheál Martin lobbied his TDs to vote for someone who wasn't even a member, they feel it's going to end up toothless because those who took part in the review already and were interviewed have spoken to the Independent, and they said that there was no questions asked about the previous election, but what we think we should do in the future. They said they're not interested in what we should do in the future because Catherine Connolly could be president for 14 years. What they need to do is look into how Jim Gavin became the candidate, how such a mess was made, why he wasn't vetted, and what exactly happened. So there is a lack of confidence among Fianna Fáil that this is actually going to prove anything fruitful that they can work on, because obviously if you don't learn from your mistakes, you're bound to make them again. Mary Regan has an analysis in The Independent this week where she says, you know, it probably will be a toothless report, but it could still very much affect Micheál Martin's leadership.
And to what extent do you think they're like, oh, are the public really interested in this? Let's just have a go at governing.
So the review is now being delayed, and a lot of TDs aren't very confident that this is going to change anything. The general feeling is that Micheál Martin will probably give it up after Christmas. Well, we don't know. So we'll keep an eye on this. It's also worth noting that Fianna Fáil in their most recent poll were at a very low ebb, but so were Fine Gael. So government parties not doing too good.
We're probably at this kind of European parliamentary politics level where everybody's about 20% and there'll just be endless coalitions, which we're going to have anyway, but maybe slightly unstable because it's easier to walk if you're bigger because you get punished less for causing an election.
Yeah, my brother lives in Amsterdam and they've just come out of an election. They have a gay prime minister now, and they have like a coalition of like four parties, which I think we're probably going to have to get used to in this part of the world as well, of like trying to cobble together. Because, you know, communities are desperate and people are varied, and like Fianna Fáil haven't had a majority since the hunger strike in 1981 when hunger strikes got elected. And that just shows you Republicans have always been disrupting Irish politics.
Stay in your lane, Republicans.
Colm, do you want to hit us with your good news?
So very briefly, as ever, COP30 is this week. It's in Belém in Brazil. Lots of countries go try and stick to promises made on climate change, make new ones. America isn't going high nor dry unless they turn up like Maleficent at the end of the party. But actually people are seeing that as a good thing because they can actually get some stuff done.
Oh, okay.
Without it being disrupted by maybe grandstand. So like there's nobody performing for the folks back home.
Is COP30 an environmental thing?
COP30 is the... what does it stand for? Is it Community of Partners or something like that? So it's every year or a couple of years, there is this giant global meeting which reviews progress in climate change, makes new promises. Because America aren't there at all, they actually think that even though it means that they'll probably pull out of the Paris Agreement, that would have happened anyway.
Yeah.
And we'll actually get some stuff done.
Oh, good.
And countries in the global south doing deals with each other. And China is coming in anyway, which has lots of faults and all of that, but makes more solar power last year than built more new solar last year than America has ever built in its existence, right?
That's deadly.
And obviously oppresses the Uyghurs and records their every move. Look, swings and roundabouts. But so that's happening against the backdrop of that. The classic environmental problem that gets everybody into environmentalism if you're over the age of 40 or 35 even is the Amazon rainforest. Like it's Captain Planet.
Yeah.
You know, trees being cut down. It's all is happening. It's just not as bad as it was in the last couple of years. So the rates are dropping. That could change. But the reason it's good news is because of the boring reasons why it stopped. Better monitoring, better satellite coverage. The people on the ground doing the reporting, the paperwork that stops people going in, illegally cutting down trees. They're probably doing it legally in other places.
Yeah.
But the overall effect is less bad shit happening.
Great.
In all of this is not as shit as it was before is good news. In unequivocal good news, though, and later today they'll be playing, I think it's Paraguay. So you'll know by the time you listen to this where Ireland topped the group in their qualifying group to get into the knockout stages of the under-17 World Cup. But they are in the knockout stages, the under-17s, I suppose under-17s boys team. And they won their two games and won them being the better team.
Wasn't
a brave, valiant defeat.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Oh, great.
Playing together, playing good stuff. It's actually, if you watch the games, it's fun. You're not watching them to your fingers going, oh, we're going to pay for this. They've won their first two games and they're through to the knockout stages. And they're a threat to anyone, according to pundits who know that the Ireland under-17s, by the time you listen to this, they're either top of the group or second in the group,
oh,
in their qualifying group. And then shout out to the amazing Katrina Jennings, who is an Irish Olympian.
Is she the girl from Donegal?
No, I think she's Dublin. Irish Olympian, like in her second marathon, she ran it in 2.5 hours. Just these people are ridiculous. Yeah. She's an ultra runner. She broke the women's 100-mile world record in Illinois, right? She ran 100 miles in 12 hours, 37 minutes and 14 seconds, carving 5 minutes off the previous record. But to put that in context, like that's 4 minutes and 42 seconds a kilometre. So people who do park runs would be delighted to do a kilometre in under 5 minutes. So she did that for 100 miles for half a day. And now, obviously there was people giving her the energy gels along the way. But this, like, that's just... And then they interviewed her yesterday in RT News and she works, I think it's in aircraft leasing or something like that. Seen her walking into her baggage office
too,
in heels.
In heels. And she is actually from Letterkenny in Donegal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
and good. She went into work just days after this wearing high heels and like tights and a skirt.
Yeah.
And they were like, how are you getting on? She was like, oh, I'm about stuff going up the stairs. I was like, yeah, girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Words can't describe this feeling, she wrote on Instagram after the race. I'm truly honoured to now hold a record set by a true champion. So, I mean, where do you even start?
What a woman.
Yeah. 100 miles. And like some of it's
learned
in the dark.
Do you think she had learned to run that fast because Donegal doesn't have any trains?
Donegal doesn't have any trains. That's just because they need positive attitude. That's what we have in Cork. We're getting a new one soon. These ultra runners, they are apparently, if you speak to people who do like, you know, runs that go into the night time, I don't know whether she's talked about this or whether it happened to her, but I've talked to people who do these big long runs and in the night they actually hallucinate. Like you are
no way.
You are running, say, in Wicklow somewhere and there might be somebody who runs with you for a while and they join you and you're in mid hallucination and you don't believe they're real. Like that's that's what can go on.
Yeah.
At that, I don't know whether it's at the 100 mile mark. Maybe she got away with it. Maybe there was enough people reminding her about the nature of reality and make believe along the way. But it must be transcendental where you're just in this zone.
Do they pee?
No, I think, actually, I suppose the more salient question is the poo question. And I think they don't. I think if you do it right.
Take a load of Imodium.
Yeah, your body is like, we are fighting and some medieval battle here. Now isn't the time.
Yeah.
And we just keep loping along.
Yeah.
I'd say you're sweating all the fluids out.
Yeah.
You smell of pee after that.
On that note, we have more listener good news. So we would like to hear your good news every week. You can email it to afewscoops@goloudnow.com or DM me and Colm. This one says, hey Aoife and Colm, my good news is that me and my boyfriend got planning permission to build a house together. Kildare is notoriously hard to get approved in. And when they came back with questions, I figured that was the end of it. And we'd have to rethink our plans, but we got it last Friday.
This
person single-handedly doing more for the housing crisis than the government themselves. And I also have good news from a follower of mine called Niamh, whose mam, right? She is from Galway. She was interviewed on this TikTok account, right? After the New York Marathon. It now has 1.7 million views because Niamh's mam has run 79 marathons and she was going to stop at 76, she said in the interview, but she said that was a stupid number to stop on. She had to stop in the middle because she got breast cancer and then came back to continue doing her marathon. She used to do a couple a year. She's now on 79. Like, you can get the video on TikTok. It's called The Line _ Show. And you'll see Niamh's mam. And she is the most little Galway woman. She's just like, love running. Love running marathons. Doesn't take a wrinkle out of her. And Niamh messaged me last night on TikTok to say that she couldn't believe that I had like reshared the video. And she said that she sent it into a few scoops as our good news. And she's very proud of her mam. So well done. I'm sorry, I don't know the woman's name. Well done, Niamh's mam, who's run 79 marathons. She said she started years ago in Galway and she's going to keep going.
She doesn't want to finish on 76. I wonder what her Will she round it off to 100?
Sorry, I didn't include that. Yeah, she's gone up to 100. Okay. She said she's going to do 100.
People who do 100 marathons don't stop at 100, though. I bet she'll go...
So shout out Niamh's mam. Yeah. What a woman. Galway getting a big shout this week in a few scoops. That's us for a few scoops this week. I will be at the inauguration refreshments this evening, so I will report back all the scandal.
I will be
gossip.
At a rival centrist dad's meeting in a council of war in Dublin tonight.
I was going to say, Calum will be at the Spoil Your Vote Fest. As always, do send us your good news. And as we are trialling a second episode, this week's second episode will be our chaser on Thursday about outgoing president Michael D. Higgins.
And he was very outgoing.
Thank you, as always, for listening. And this week we have a new producer for the week, Aoife. So thank you very much, Aoife,
thanks,
for looking
Aoife.
After us. And we'll see you again next week. Thank you.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.